Campus FM presents a talk by Professor Johannes van Oort on Manichaean Gnosticism and St. Augustine, organized by the Augustinian Institute.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm hesitating about sitting or standing. You have a free will and you may choose it. Say it to me, what I have to do. And now, presently, all people can see me, all can hear me. Do you want me to stand? Yesterday I stand. Presently, I prefer to give more of a lecture. And maybe it is the best way to sit down. And during the discussion, we will look for a middle of the way solution. During the discussion, I will stand there. Can all agree?
Yes.
Thanks a lot. My first point, or let me say as a small introduction, what I said yesterday evening is written in a book, and maybe this book can go around and you will have a first look at it, and you may be sure tomorrow it will be in the possession of Father Salvino. So you can read, borrow it from him if you like it, and read it at the institute, or you can borrow it and read it at home. And bring it back, please. For I heard already about a video on Augustine, and Father Salvino is still missing that video. No, I don't see anybody who is will have it, but maybe. The second book. This is a booklet published in Tbilisi in Georgia. It contains three lectures on Mani, Manichaeism and Augustine, the rediscovery of Manichaeism and its influence on Western Christianity. It contains the main lines of what I hope to say this evening. So it may go around as well. Ladies and gentlemen, it was in the year 373 that Augustine, as a student in Carthage, the capital of the Roman province, Africa, became an ardent follower of the Manichaeans. He became one of their auditors, and he stayed with them for more than 10 years, until he returned to the Catholic Church in Milan in the year 386. This is a very important aspect of his life and his theology. During his formative years, from his 19th year, during the period of life when one's personality is particularly shaped, in those years he was a Gnostic Christian. We even venture to say that without a thorough knowledge of the so-called religion of light, Manichaeism, in any case in its Latin form, not African form, Augustine's theology is hardly conceivable. From his 19th up to and even beyond his 28th year, he was a Manichaean hearer. In many of the writings after his return to the Catholic Christian Church, he was involved in a conflict with his former co-religionists and at the same time with his own Manichaean past. This period began with the work on the morals of the Catholic Church and the morals of the Manichaeans. He started that in Rome 387 and finished it when he was returned to Africa. And this period came to a provisional conclusion with his work On the Nature of Good, finished in 404. Apart from many excursus in his letters, sermons and major works, for instance in his famous The City of God, it was near the end of his life, in the writings against the so-called Pelagians, and in particular in his writing against the Pelagian Julian of Eclanum, that Augustine had again to struggle against the charge that he was still a Manichaean. A Latin quotation: Si mutabit aetiops pelem suam aut pardus varietatem, ita et tua manichaeorum mysteriis elueris, Julian of Eclanum stated. I will declare that later. If it might possible, Julian, that colleague of him, this Catholic bishop from Italy, if it might be possible that an Aetiops, a black man from Ethiopia, could change his skin, it is a quotation from the Bible, and it is directed as Augustine, who had a dark face, if that is possible, and if it could be possible for a leopard to change his spots, which, as all of us know, is impossible, then, Julian says, it will be possible for you to wash away the dirt of the Manichaean mysteries. This is a venomous remark, probably even a racist one. But all the same, it came from an Italian colleague of Augustine, who was then already a very famous bishop in Rome and North Africa. It came from a Catholic colleague, well-educated man and well-informed about Greek theology. In fact, he said, Augustine, what you are introducing in Western theology and in Western spirituality is new. And if it is new, it is not true. In fact, you are still a Manichaean. We will look at this question this evening, for it is an important question. To approach the main stages of our theme as clearly as possible, I wish to discuss two important points. First, to what extent was Augustine initially as a Manichaean and later on as a Catholic bishop acquainted with Manichaeism, and in what form did this Manichaeism manifest itself to him? And the second question, and the most important of course, but the first question is already important, to make the second question, what can be said about a lasting influence, if there is any lasting influence, but I say there is, of Manichaeism for Augustine? And is it of importance to today's Catholicism? As regards our first point, we must first of all stress the fact that the young Augustine, the hearer, he was not an elect of the Manichaeans. He tried to become an elect. he says in his famous Confessions. But already as an elect, he was already well acquainted with Manichaeism. This has to be emphasized, because even today, and I will not mention name at this moment, for I can then mention the name of one of the most famous Catholic theologians, but I will restrain from that for the moment. Even today, there are still some theologians who do not take note of this very fact. They say, for instance, that in his youth, Augustine was not interested in theological questions, only in philosophical questions, and that his interest in Manichaeism was only superficial. And there are others who maintain that, on the one hand, there was the auditor Augustine, who was misled by the Manichaeans, but did not really know what it was all about. And that, on the other hand, there was the older Augustine, the famous bishop of Hippo Regius, and that then as a bishop, he became acquainted with writings of the Manichaeans, and that as a bishop, he could show his real knowledge of Manichaeism. But this picture is incorrect. It is easy to illustrate that already Augustine, as a young man, as an auditor of the Manichaeans, was very well acquainted with the Gnostic world religion of light. Let me make a few quotations from book 3 of the Confessions. In book 3, he tells us how he fell in Carthage on the Manichaeans. I suppose that we can see it in this way, that at the market of the famous city of Carthage, you know it is near present-day Tunis, and on the market, on the forum, there were walking men and also women, but in particular men in white dresses and with white veils, and they spoke during the whole day about Christ, and that they had the real knowledge of Christ, the real gnosis, and then Augustine fell amongst the Manichaeans when he was in his 19th year as a young student in Carthage. In book 5 of the Confessions, Augustine emphatically says that when, as an auditor, he began to doubt the Manichaeans' allegations concerning the movements of the stars and the sun and the moon, they were famous astrologers, when Augustine began to doubt about their allegations, and when he compared his knowledge gained, and then a quotation, in the books of secular wisdom with, once again a quotation, with the sayings of Mani, who wrote copiously and foolishly on these matters, that then he discovered, and that is important, as a young man in the books of the Manichaeans, even in the Libri Manichaei, in the books of Mani himself, the irregular and irrational allegations of the Manichaeans. A little further on, in book 5, he also says that in there, that is, in the Manichaeans' books, that there are immensely lengthy fables about the heaven and the stars and the sun and the moon. We could say, this is reasoning of Augustine in retrospect. because at the time when he wrote the Confessions, at about the year 400, he was not a Manichaean, but he was returned to the Catholic Church. But that is not correct. For once again, another point. At the time, so he writes in the Confessions, at the time around 381, when he finally met the famous Manichaean Bishop Faustus, he said that certain questions in which he was involved in his discussion with that Manichaean bishop, he had read, he himself, Augustine, in the books of Mani. So he was already then well acquainted with the books of Mani himself. It should be noted that Augustine speaks only with reticence about his knowledge of Manichaean writings. A similar reticence can be observed, for example, in his dispute in Hippo in 392 with the local Manichaean priest Fortunatus. In the Manichaean church, you had a kind of pope. He had his seat in Baghdad. After the Muslims came there, he removed his seat to Samarkand. He was the head of the church, the archegos, a kind of pope. After that came 12 apostles, really. After that, 72 bishops. And we know the name of one of the bishops, Faustus, who met Augustine. After that, under that, 360 presbyters, and then many, many auditors. Augustine, in the year 392, has a discussion in Hippo with a Manichaean priest, a certain Fortunatus. When he makes that discussion in 392 with Fortunatus, he only, for he then is the new Catholic presbyter there, opposite the Manichaean the local Manichaean presbyter, then he is in a very weak position. He has to give an open discussion with that presbyter, and all the people of Hippo have gathered together, and they will hear what the new Manichaean, what the new Catholic presbyter will say over against the Manichaean presbyter. And also pagans are present, and also Donatist Christians are present. And then Augustine is in a very weak position, and he has to attend all his words. And then the Manichaean presbyter Fortunatus gives this statement of his belief. And at first hearing, we will say, what is the difference with real Orthodox Catholic belief? The Fortunatus says, this confession. He says, our profession is this very thing, that God is the highest one in the universe, that God is incorruptible, lucid, unapproachable, untenable, impassable, that God inhabits his own eternal light, that nothing that is corrupt proceeds from him. Neither darkness, demons, Satan, that God sent forth a Savior like himself. That the Word, born since the foundation of the world, when he, the Word, had formed the world, that after the formation of the world, the Word came among men. That he has chosen souls worthy of himself according to his own holy will. That under his leadership, those souls will return to the kingdom of God according to the holy promise of Jesus, who said, I am the way, the truth, and the door, and no one can come to the Father except through me, etc. This is the confession of a Manichaean priest. On first hearing this, one would say, this is Orthodox Christian belief, on first hearing. And certainly, it claimed to be genuine and independent Christian belief. We are a secta, Bishop Forster said, not a schisma of the pagans or the Jews. The word secta implies that there is a separate professio, a profession with a separate Christian way of life. A profession like, for instance, predecessors of Augustine in the Christian North Africa tradition, as Tertullian and Cyprian once proclaimed. They said, we are the secta Christiana. For more than 10 years, Augustine became familiar with this secta of veri Christiani, of real Christians, so they claimed to be themselves. The Manichaeans said of themselves, we are the real Christians. And Augustine was not an outsider, but he was a well-informed insider. Our second point. Did this Manichaeism then leave lasting traces in Augustine's theology? We have already indicated that it certainly did. Augustine's antithetical attitude in his first works, the works he has written after his return to the Catholic Christian Church, the works written in the period 386-87 until 404, all are anti-Manichaean works. Or in any case, they contain several important anti-Manichaean elements. To mention a few, in the first works of Augustine, he always tries to give a real explanation of the creation story in the book Genesis. He tries that more than 3 times. And a 4th time is in the last books of his famous Confessions. Book 11, 12, 13 are curiously about the first verses, the first sentences of the book of Genesis. It is not on Augustine himself, it is on God's creation. That is a further indication of what I said this morning, that the confessions, in a sense, from its first sentence onwards, great are you, God, Magnus es Domine, et laudabilis valde, from its first sentences onwards until its final sentences, is in a sense a anti-Manichaean work. So Augustine wrote during a long period against the Manichaeans, and after that came a new period in his life when he wrote against the Donatists, and then final periods when he wrote against the Pelagians, to give a raw sketch of his life. The first period, but also the final one, when Julian of Eclanum came on the stage, was typical anti-Manichaean. Let us consider first these traces, these anti-Manichaean traces. Augustine first wrote on Genesis. All these endeavors are clearly anti-Manichaean. But also elsewhere, for instance, in his City of God, we find this anti-Manichaean interpretation of the creation story. Against the Gnostic opinion, the intrinsic goodness of creation had to be defended. The goodness of the creator of this world, as it was denied by the Manichaeans. And in the end, also the real significance for the Christian church of the whole Old Testament. As you may know, Gnostic always skip out the Old Testament from the Bible, like, for instance, Marcion did already, like Mani did, and so many other Gnostics. They skipped out the Old Testament, but we as Christians cannot understand the significance of Jesus, of the Jew, Jesus Christ, and of the significance of the message of Paul, etc., without having a thorough knowledge of the Old Testament. I had in Utrecht a few years ago a professor, and he said, in a sense, the New Testament is the index and the key for the Old Testament. So we can understand the Bible. It is a mutual relation, but it is also impossible to understand the New Testament without knowledge of the Old One. And Augustine, in his first writings, defended the significance of the so-called Old, or better said, First Testament. There is, however, a drawback to this anti-Manichaean attitude. Augustine's reaction to Manichaeism did not only affect his exegesis of the Bible, but he was also led to a remarkable conservatism in regard to the text of the Bible and its translations. For many years, he held on to the inspiration of the so-called Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, which was also available in Latin versions, and he said it is even dangerous, because the Manichaeans were so great Bible critics, it is even dangerous to make a new Bible translation.
left a stick in North Africa for the benefit of our simple congregation folk, of our believers, to the old translation, the Septuagint. It was a Manichaean attitude, and by then, only later, he adhered to the new Bible translation as we have it until now, the Latin Bible translation of Jerome, the so-called Vulgatus. But there are other aspects of Augustine's attitude towards the scriptures that must be considered in the light of his Manichaean past. In his exegesis, his emphasis is on the harmony among the evangelists, and his special interest is in the genealogies of Jesus in Matthew and Luke. Why? Because these names, as we read it in the beginning of the Gospel of Matthew and also in the beginning of the Gospel of Luke, because the descendant, the Jewish descendants of Christ, was denied by the Manichaeans. And therefore, Augustine in particular preached about this matter. Another aspect, Augustine's emphasis on the truths of scriptures is also to explain as a reaction to Manichaean Bible criticism. It was no coincidence that the first Western synods to deal with the canon of the Bible, what is in it, what is not in it, were held in Roman North Africa, in the city of Hippo, and in the city of Carthage, and Augustine took an active part in these first councils. Because, once again, the Manichaeans were severe Bible critics at the one hand, and at the other hand, they introduced new gospels. For instance, the famous Gospel of Thomas. Famous, yes, we have it since the discoveries in Nag Hammadi in Egypt in December 1945. We have the words of Jesus in a new version, the so-called Gospel of Thomas. And the Gospel of Thomas was in high esteem amongst the Manichaeans. And Augustine said, that is not a real gospel. We can come back in our discussion to this problem. Maybe there are some people who have read the Gospel of Thomas. Augustine said, we have to establish in our Western Catholic Church a clear canon of the Bible in accordance with the Eastern Christian Church, St. Athanasius, for instance. But it was an anti-Manichaean stance. Another notable fact. Augustine wrote at a certain moment five works together, and he sent those works to a bishop, a friend of him, in Italy, and to the wife of this bishop as a present. He called it a Pentateuch, a book consisting of five books, directed against the so-called Manichaean Pentateuch, who was originally directed against the Mosaic Pentateuch, against the Pentateuch of Moses, the first five books of the Bible. Also, a clear indication of a anti-Manichaean stance. Notwithstanding all this evident anti-Manichaeism, there is also another side to the picture. One may ask whether there is not also a positive way in which Augustine, consciously or unconsciously, was influenced by the Manichaeans of his time and world. A small but significant fact may be our first point. When quoting Bible texts, Augustine does quote Bible text when he is preaching, and it is typical, he is always quoting from his immense memory. When he is sitting in his cathedra in Hippo, he is quoting from his memory. And by and then, he is quoting from the so-called harmony of the Gospels made in the East by Tatian and in high esteem amongst the Manichaeans. By and then he quotes the Bible from his Manichaean past. That's only a very small point, but so we see his first acquaintance with the Bible, with the Gospels, in a harmony, was during his Manichaean times, and also he wrote the Apostle Paul during his Manichaean years. And so we also understand why Augustine, in the famous scene in Milano of his conversion, when he is sitting under a tree and so on, you know that story, that he is reading, rereading with new eyes a codex, a book with the letters of the Apostle Paul. He is trying to understand Saint Paul in a new Catholic way. Maybe there is also another important point. When Augustine is speaking of Jesus Christ, the Christ figure, he is laying emphasis on the fact that Christ is a medician, Christus Medicus. He does emphasize this aspect in his Christology more than other church fathers. And I think that is a positive influence from his Manichaean past. When we read, for instance, the new Manichaean text from Egypt, when we read the Manichaean Psalms, there is always spoken of Christ as the medician, Christ as the one who is the healer. And Augustine, as a Catholic bishop, lays emphasis on this aspect. I think there is also a negative point of Manichaean influence on Augustine. Augustine is giving several times in his works an explanation, an exegesis of a passage from the letter of Paul to the Romans. Romans 8, the verses 19 until 23. The Apostle Paul speaks here of the groaning of creation. And he says, for instance, St. Paul, "For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. And also, St. Paul, we know that the whole creation has been groaning in travail together with us,
men,
human beings, until now. End of the quote of the letter to the Romans. Here, the Apostle Paul clearly says that the whole creation, that means human beings, animals, plants, sun, moon, star, the whole cosmos is suffering together with human beings. And the Manichaeans did understand this very well. So, this was one of the reasons that the Manichaeans in their myth spoke of Christ as the center of the cosmos, and Christ was the suffering Jesus. Jesus, Jesus patibilis, who is suffering everywhere in the cosmos. To the former Manichaean, Augustine, such an idea was intolerable, and thus led on by his anti-Manichaean sentiment, he says that Paul, St. Paul, would have meant only rational creation, only human beings. That may be seen, in my opinion, as a serious limitation of Paul's cosmic view, and this limitation seems to have brought unfavorable consequences to the history of the Western Church. That, unlike so many Greek fathers, ran the risk of forgetting the cosmic implication of Christ's redemption by speaking only of the individual soul's salvation from sin. So we find it after Augustine, for instance, in St. Thomas, or Calvin, to mention another person from another tradition, that they say always Paul, St. Paul, has in view only human beings. But St. Paul has in view the whole cosmos. And maybe we had to wait in Catholic theology until Teilhard de Chardin and other persons to see this aspect again. There is, however, also another side to the matter. With Wilhelm Gerlings, a German colleague, one may point to Augustine's emphasis on Christ as a teacher, Christus Magister, also in particular stressed in Augustine's theology. And he may have learned that also from Manichaeism. In Manichaeism, in the Gnostic religion, Christ is described first and foremost as a teacher, as an illuminator, the one who gives the divine and redeeming gnosis, as we spoke of this aspect of Manichaeism this morning. This may be, I think, another example of a positive influence of Manichaeism. Christ as an illuminator, Christ as the wisdom of God, the first sentence of the Confessions lays stress of Christ as the wisdom of God. In these instances, however, it is, we must admit that, very difficult to distinguish between a possible, also possible, Neoplatonic influence and possible Manichaean influence. And one may also simply say one can read all this in the letters of Paul. That is correct. But the stress laid by Augustine is typical one of the positive points he may have learned from the Manichaeans. My final point, and I think the most important point to see the importance of Gnosticism for even today's Catholicism. And that is Augustine's attractive piety, his stress on the human being as an individual. As far as I can see, nowhere in the Western Church before 400 we find such a sensitive, tender, and pious experience, real experience of God and His Christ, as in Augustine and among the Manichaeans. I have already mentioned that this Manichaean piety seems to be one of the main reasons for Augustine joining the Manichaeans. He says this explicitly in book 3 of his Confessions. And there he also says, et cantabam carmina. Nearly all translations until now have this translated as, I wrote poems. But that is not what Augustine is saying here. Augustine is saying, I was singing Manichaean hymns et cantabam carmina. Themes present in those Manichaean hymns, also called psalms, we now have for the first time discovered from Egyptian soil, and we can compare them with Augustine's piety, and we say, yes, he has learned from the Manichaeans, for we see the same themes in this Manichaean psalms as we now see in the Confessions. Stress on the experience of Christ in your heart, that Christ is the revealer of your inner self. That is Gnostic terminology, okay? But it is also, let we not forget it, it is also legitimate Catholic Orthodox terminology. Augustine starts his Confessions with the famous sentence, Magnus est Domine et laudabilis valde. Why does he give this quote from the Psalms? Because in Manichaeism, God, the highest God, is revered as the Father of greatness. And now Augustine says, great are you, the God of the Bible, great are you, and so on. He speaks in the Confessions of God's call from the heavenly world. God is seeing all of us as an individual person. He makes a call to us, and we may give an answer. That is one of the central themes in the Manichaean Psalms. Augustine takes over it, and he describes his own life in the Confessions as a call that he heard from the heavenly world, and he gave the answer. So we can go on with mentioning positive Manichaean points which Augustine integrated in Catholic Orthodox Christianity. Let me finish with this point. I began with the quotation that phenomenous remark of that Catholic Christian colleague of Augustine from Italy, Bishop Julian of Eclanum. He said, "Yes, Augustine, yes, you could not wash away that you was a Manichaean." And I think, in a sense, in a positive sense, Julian was right. Augustine did not wash away all what he learned during his Manichaean Gnostic years. In one of his writings, he says, in De Utilitate Credendi, he says, "I learned positive things when I was a Manichaean." You can, in your life, learn positive things from your opponents and integrate them in your own way of thinking, your own way of life, and your own theology. Augustine, in my view, is so appealing. Augustine, in my view, is so modern. Augustine, in my view, is so appealing even for persons in our new age, because once he was an adherent of the new age movement of his time, and therefore he is such an actual church father for our times. Thank you very much indeed.
You have just listened to a talk by Professor Johannes van Oort on Manichaean Gnosticism and St. Augustine, organized by the Augustinian Institute.